This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Keep it rolling here on a Thursday night. Matt, what's the stat? 21 straight Thursdays starting tonight. Football on our television screens.
Gotta love it, Tim. Whew. We're going to be here every Thursday night, too.
So, we will. Yeah. Drew Dinsick won't be here every Thursday night, but we are happy that he has joined us in studio. He was a part of Bet Bash. You were talking tennis betting. You're one of the many great tennis minds that we have on VSiN. But we're going to talk football with you at least first. Maybe we'll fit it in here, but let's start with the game tonight. We have a preseason game. We have lines to bet on, Drew. Cardinals and Panthers total has come down to around 34. Yeah. Right now, if you look at the spread, you have Arizona, 1.5-point dog. What do you make of tonight's Hall of Fame game? How are you looking to attack it?
Yeah, so agree with the total move, particularly like the first half under here. I think there's a very real world where it's 0-0 at half. this is a pretty clear and obvious misprice on the side, though. I think Arizona should be the favorite. It's a qualitative angle. This is not like I've cracked the code of the quarterback snaps and they're completely missing something obvious here. This is mostly just a matter of the fact that we've gone through a full offseason now of the Arizona Cardinals being told they're the worst team in football, and that they have no business even fielding a team this year. They're playing for the first overall pick. But then when you actually look at the talent that's on this roster outside the quarterback position, it's like very average.
Yeah.
This is not a team that is like clear and obvious depletion at key levels on the defense or the offense, from what I can tell you. And while I'm not a guy that's really dying to go to war with this quarterback room over the balance of a season, particularly in the very tough NFC West, to me, the Cardinals are more like a -4, -3 even, I can talk myself into. And the market right now pricing them like a -7. They're 10.5-point dogs week one against the Chargers. That's a really, really tough number to square. Even someone who's bullish on the Chargers, I feel like there's value there on the Cardinals. And then for this game, Cardinals coming in with a little bit of like, you know, the disrespect is very clear and obvious in their face. Mostly people clipping the lowlights of their early days of camp and making conclusions that they're going to lose every game this season.
Those are funny, though.
They're funny. Oh, yeah. No, have I participated? Have I said some to my friends? Have I been like, man, it's weird that Marvin Harrison's hands are made of concrete blocks. But the reality is, you know, they do have something to prove in this game. And the Panthers, the mission is very, very obviously the other side of the coin. They have lost key players.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like every week of camp so far, the offensive line right now lacking in continuity and missing their two most important pieces. So as I kind of look at the Panthers, and if I'm their coaching staff, if I'm that that brain trust, the mission is obvious: stay healthy, do not put your players at risk, try to shorten this game. Like, you know, I don't think that there's a world where you're going to see an aggressive offensive, you know, game plan here from Canales and company. Panthers, I think, are going to play into, the anger of the Cardinals here and struggle to sustain drives. And Cardinals, on the other hand, may not have many successful drives in this contest, but I think they'll have enough to get the win. So for me, it looks pretty obvious you should be playing Cardinals at this price. And I do think first half under and full game under likely come home. Now, it's a beautiful night in Canton, so we don't have a weather factor to help us out. But
what was it a couple years ago when the game got called with like 10 minutes to go and all the bets got refunded?
I was actually 3:30 to go in the third quarter. It was lightning. It was lightning and heavy rain, and that was in the 2024 game. Yeah,
good memory.
Yeah,
Drew Dinsick here in studio us.
You bet first half under and game under.
Right? First half under and game under. I still like them at price, even though they've moved. I feel like right now, at least with the market closing, biggest edge is on the Cardinals.
All right. I was needing a bet. I just bet it. I'll go first half under. I'm with Drew.
He said bet the Cardinals.
All right. I want to see too. If do I wait? Do I get a little greedy? Do I get a better number in game? Drew, it is an in-game betting show. So I will bet the first half under and maybe I get greedy and maybe Carolina goes up 3-0 and I get a better number. I don't know. So, but Drew, good angle there. We were just talking about it. Let's look at the NFC West. It's loaded, and then it's the Cardinals.
Yeah.
The win total has obviously come down quite considerably on the Cardinals, but I'm curious your handicap of the NFC West. Is there someone that jumps out to you in the NFC West?
Yeah, so I'm going to go into this season with the Rams power rated as the number one team in the NFL. There's a gap between them and number two, who for me is the Seahawks. And that sets up a pretty interesting, you know, kind of market entry question for all of the bettors out there who are not just playing the NFC West, but the NFC and the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the sequencing of the Rams schedule, it does not, in my opinion, support betting them now. I think, like, honestly, something would have to happen to Stafford, Nacua, or both for me not to have the Rams power rated number one wire to wire here. And it's just a matter of, you know, kind of timing. When do you bet them? Not if you bet them. And as you look at the sequence of the schedule, the two most important games, really the three most important games on their schedule, their opener, they're at a disadvantage against the Niners. They're giving away a home game to the Niners by going to Australia. The news came out relatively recently that the Niners are, in my opinion, doing the correct thing for that game and going a week early to get themselves acclimated to the body clock of, you know, of that part of the globe, which if you've ever traveled to Oceania, does not feel good on the human body in the first couple of days once you're down there. Rams are going to risk it, though, and try to make the move right on the eve of the game. Mm. And I could see that having a negative impact, particularly, you know, against the Niners team that's doing the opposite and giving them a full week to acclimate. And then the other two most important games on their schedule are obviously at Seattle and home versus Seattle. Those are weeks 16 and 18. So realistically, the NFC West and the NFC One seed are going to be presumably decided in around Christmas.
Yeah.
So the fact that that is such a high leverage flip in terms of how you price, you know, the both path and just overall, you know, outright, you kind of have to sit on your hands, I think. You know, the likelihood that one of those teams gets the bye and then only has to play two games to get to the Super Bowl, you know, that changes your probability of Super Bowl odds, of NFC odds, to the tune of almost 10%. So realistically, until we kind of have a cleaner picture of the Rams have remained healthy, they have not taken a bunch of unexpected losses in the first half of the season, and they are primed to take advantage of, you know, the stronger roster in those two matchups against Seattle, I think you can basically wait until Christmas before you got to make your bet.
Yep, I like that. That approach to it. I had the Rams power rated number one at the end of last season.
Yes.
You know? And I see no reason to bet the Rams now as Super Bowl favorites, so I'd agree with that. So we're talking about the Cardinals and the NFC West. Tim and I were talking about the NFC South. We're going to see the Panthers tonight. We're talking about that before you came in here. How do you handicap this division? Three teams were 8-9. No. Saints were 6-11. Panthers, Falcons, Bucks, Saints. How do you separate those teams?
Yeah, so... I put the teams across the NFL into four buckets. I have a bucket of teams that has high floor, which is to say they have a defense that either because of scheme or personnel, very likely to be in the mix for a playoff spot. I have a team that has high ceiling, which is you're on a flawed team or, you know, the new coaching staff that we don't know much about, but you have an elite quarterback or you have an elite offensive system. So there is a chance that your ceiling hits and you're that team that distinguishes themselves and, you know, you're all of a sudden the team to beat. And then a third bucket of what are we doing here? And a fourth bucket of not competing, right? The not competing bucket is pretty obvious. The what are we doing here? All four NFC South teams are in that bucket. One of them will make the playoffs, but it's not really clear to me what the vision is of any of these teams in terms of, like, what are we trying to accomplish in 2026? The Carolina Panthers, to me at least, are almost best served by kind of getting early signal that Bryce Young is not a guy you want to extend. And if they get that signal and they eventually use this year to kind of pivot towards draft choice and, you know, replacing the quarterback, which I think is the path they're on, then I think they're candidates for, you know, a 3-4 win season. Would not shock me at all. Like, they are well coached. They have decent weapons in the passing game. But this defense has humongous problems at the second and third level. The pass rush without Scorton is depleted. Really only has, you know, Derek Brown to speak of in terms of guys that I rate as plus players on that D-line. And I think in general, this Panthers team, with the schedule that they were afforded, which is the hardest of the four, are going to find themselves in third or fourth place in this division.
You know, we were talking about this too. A lot of the handicappers are high on the Saints. They think that's a team on the rise. You buying or not on the Saints?
Among the four, yeah, buying. But in terms of how would I price them against a wild card team like the Seahawks or the Rams in the 4-5? I would probably make them 7-point dogs at home in that matchup. So it's a weird kind of a lot of times you look at, well, what is the team's offseason telling you about how they feel about their quarterback? And if you read what the Saints did this offseason, it's telling you that they want to bet on Shuck, right? Going and getting a good wide receiver in the draft, investing in the offensive line with Edwards. Those were two moves that, Etienne in the backfield. Like, upgrading at those positions tells you that they intend to put an offense on the field that's going to score points this year, and they're going to try to win on that side of the ball. Kellen Moore, I thought, did a remarkable job as a freshman coach. I think as a sophomore coach, he could take a step forward with Shuck under center. And they may make mistakes. They may have a very tough time beating the good teams on their schedule. But the Saints getting to 9-8 and winning the South, I think, is very much in the cards.
Sure. Football is underway as the Carolina Panthers and the Arizona Cardinals have started in Canton, Ohio. Drew Dinsick is kind enough to hang out with us for another segment, so we're going to dive into, maybe some regression candidates, some teams to buy low on. Always kind of an interesting discussion this time of year. The Carolina Panthers and Arizona Cardinals right now, as we take a look at it, Matt, we have an update, and it is 33.5 is the total down as Kenny Pickett short of the sticks. That's what we like to see. Let's roll that clock. More with Drew Dinsick. By the way, the Boston Red Sox, will they finally lose a game? White Sox up 4-2. That game in the top of the fourth inning. More NFL chatter with the Hall of Fame game underway with Drew Dinsick right here on VSIN Primetime.
Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Underway in the Hall of Fame game. Nice little three and out. That's a good start for the total down to 31.5. Carson Beck showing the mobility, Matt. Time to bet him to win Offensive Rookie of the Year? I did make an Offensive Rookie of the Year bet today, and we could talk about that later on in the show. But we got Drew Dinsick hanging out with us for another segment. Mike Sando, he has put out his yearly piece on the quarterback tiers, talks to folks all across the league, and we will get him on the program here in 15 minutes. But, it's always great to try to find those teams, those regression teams, those teams to sell, right? You look at the numbers, wow, things just kind of worked out perfectly. If you look back to last year, obviously the Washington Commanders, they win 11 games, injuries hit them, and they finish in last place. So a team that you're looking to maybe sell on where they finished last year, Drew, would be who?
I guess the clear and obvious one is the Packers for me. I know that, in the NFC North, it's, pretty popular right now to key on the Bears just because the Bears defense was so lucky last year in terms of turnovers, and that will almost certainly regress. But I can't really in any way, shape, or form poke holes in what Ben Johnson did with that offense. I think that his running game and running scheme in particular keep that offense with a very high floor. And Caleb Williams in year three, I'm expecting big things. So they are going to have to win games by scoring 35 points, but I'm not really one to say that Ben Johnson can't accomplish that with the pieces that he has in play there. So Packers are a different story. I think the weird thing about most of Jordan Love's success at the NFL level has come not because of how many outstanding wide receiving options he had, but maybe more so because he was afforded time to be able to, kind of not just create within the system, but then outside of structure, he really was able to, hit some home runs down the field. Paradigm changes. This is now a bottom five offensive line. Pretty much no matter how you draw it up, only Tom, formerly Tom, is the only guy that's a plus on that entire line. He plays on the right side, so that doesn't even really help you blindside. And I think there's 100% a world where Jordan Love is now not afforded the time to operate out of structure because the pressure is going to be coming often right up the middle on him. And I think that actually sets up a potential for, even though I like him as a quarterback and I love Matt LaFleur as a play designer, I definitely have questions about them being able to be consistent on the offensive side of the ball. And then the defense, you know, is in until Micah Parsons comes back, like, this is bottom 10, obviously, to me. I do not see many positives across this roster. The pass rush looks completely toothless in the absence of Parsons. And, you know, big questions for me about how the safeties and cornerback room, as they age up, are still able to perform. So Packers, to me, are the very, you know, they should be priced kind of in like the, you know, pick 'em range. And that's the only team in the NFC North that I would put in that category. I think the Vikings are more like plus two. I think the Bears are about a plus two. And I think the Lions are plus three, three and a half. So if you're the, you know, if you're clearly in another tier among the four teams in your really competitive division and you have a difficult schedule, I think there's absolutely a world where you underwhelm this year. And then, you know, you're relying pretty heavily on Tucker Kraft coming off an ACL and being a humongous difference maker if this offense is going to get you wins on a really difficult schedule.
I hear what you're saying about the Packers, and they had two ridiculous losses to the Bears
yeah.
at the end of last season. I wasn't sure that Matt LaFleur was going to survive that. I really thought he probably should have been fired after that happened. Now, a year ago, Tim and I talked about this tonight, too. A year ago at this time, the Lions were playing in this Hall of Fame game, and I thought the Lions were going to regress last year.
Yes.
I think the Lions are set for a bounce back this year, and the schedule is part of the reason why. But how do you feel about Detroit?
Yeah, they're a team that if the schedule was top 10 difficult, I would be excited because everyone would be looking to buy the bounce, and I didn't think it was likely to come. The fact that the schedule is as soft as it is, this looks like a lot of wins to me. That said, the sell high on Jared Goff was so obvious after Ben Johnson walked out the door that I don't know that there is necessarily now a buy low based on who they brought in to be the offensive coordinator. The Drew Petzing experience in Arizona was so bad last year. And you can go back to 2 years and be like, well, 2 years ago he was pretty competent. Maybe it was just, you know, the injuries and bad situation. They were told to lose, for all we know, right? Like, you know, there you can make excuses for Petzing last year. But as I look at what made Arizona special 2 years ago, at least special in the eyes of, like, exceeded expectations, it was the running game. It was the fact that they got more out of James Conner than you ever conceivably sure. could have. Yeah. Yeah. And you know who I give credit to that for? Clayton Adams.
I thought you were going to say James Conner.
James Conner gets some of the credit. But the play design that Clayton Adams had as okay. far as the run game coordinate, you know, run game part of the coordinator room, you know, I undersold it in terms of what it would mean for the Cowboys last year.
Right.
Because he got more out of the sum of the parts with the run game in Dallas last year, in my opinion. I saw this huge step backwards for the Arizona Cardinals run game. To me, that tells me that Petzing does not really have, like, a vision and, you know, kind of a structure to what he wants to do that's going to turn things around for Jared Goff. Jared Goff, also a guy who, if you can generate quick pressure on him, particularly up the middle, he turns into a pumpkin. Like, he really, really, really relies on his first read yes. being available and having a relatively clean pocket to deliver on that read. And so I kind of look at the Lions schedule and I see a bunch of games where I'm like, man, this team is cruising. If they're putting up 30 points on the bad teams on this schedule, and then they run up against a team that has a good interior pass rush, like, you are going to get beautiful situational spots to sell the Lions all the way across this schedule. They probably finish 12-5. They probably are in the mix for a home playoff game. You know, if they draw the likes of the Seahawks or the Rams in the playoffs, that, you know, Jared Goff is a sitting duck against those pass rushers.
I would not be looking to bet the Lions in those situations. Talk about incompetent offenses. How about this Panthers series here? They start.
Just don't throw a pick six.
First down in their own three.
Brutal.
And, Tim, they shocked the defense with a stunning call of a run right up the middle, and they lost 2 yards. Then Kenny Pickett throws it into traffic over the middle. Lucky it was not picked off. And now we've got a penalty on third down, so it's 3rd and 12 at the half-yard line. Kenny Pickett is going to fire from his own end zone, and that's going to be incomplete.
I was waiting
close.
For him to pull a Orlovsky.
Oh, we got a penalty.
There we go.
There you go. Bailed out by a pass interference.
Kind of like it, though. You know, let's keep – because if you punt that there, he's got the Cardinals are looking at a great field position. So this elongates that – elongates that drive. We're hanging with Drew Dinsick, a couple more minutes with him. So how about a team that underachieved last year, whether it be injuries, whether however it be. So who's that team that you're looking to buy low on?
I'm struggling with this question, honestly. I think kind of boring answer is the Ravens.
Okay.
It's the Ravens, and it's a specific injury, Lamar Jackson. As I look at his tape from 2025, it was, in my opinion, marred by something pretty significant he played through. His ability to elude pressure from probably, like, I'd say week four through the end of the season was a huge factor in him being just a less efficient quarterback. His 2024 numbers were as good as I've ever seen a quarterback put up. I know he lost effectively a tiebreaker to Josh Allen for MVP that year, but that was his best season as a pro, including the 2 years he did win MVP. And if that guy shows up and is fully healthy for the full season with the defense that's now coordinated by Jesse Minter, who consistently got more out of the sum of the parts in the LA Chargers than he deserved to, then, I could definitely see a world where defense is at least average for this Ravens team, and Lamar Jackson brings you a top three offense, at which point it's tough for me not to make the Ravens the favorite with a little bit of margin in the AFC.
When you look at the Steelers, 8.5 is their win total, I believe, still. Is it finally the time that they have a below 500 record?
I mean, this is now going from sophisticated quantitative handicap to a little bit of witchcraft, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I do feel like Mike Tomlin enforced a standard in Pittsburgh that the players conformed to. And, like, it was pretty clear that, what defined success in a season for them was not a postseason run, a Super Bowl pursuit. It was getting above that 500 mark.
Right.
And now that Tomlin's gone, like, does the guard come down a little bit for some of those veterans in terms of what defines success? Do they use this as a little bit of an exhale? And does Aaron Rodgers farewell tour and poorly. I think just for fun discussion purposes, the funniest thing that could happen in the NFL this year is if the Steelers have a worse record than the Browns and get a better quarterback pick in next year's quarterback draft and get a guy who is the next anchor of their franchise at the quarterback position while the Browns are swinging away at whoever else is
don't
left.
Don't you think it'd benefit the Steelers to be bad this year?
100%.
And if you want to be bad, you hire Mike McCarthy.
One of the weirdest.
Drew Dinsick. All right, final 20 seconds. Yannick Sinner or the field in the U.S. Open?
Yannick Sinner. And I think, but here you go. Ready?
Yep.
Wait to make the bet. Carlos Alcaraz is going to play.
Okay.
And when he plays, Sinner's price will come down a hair, and then you get in.
All right, another good punt, by the way. Punt fest, we like it. Drew Dinsick, much appreciated, sir.
Hey, best luck, guys.
There he is, Drew Dinsick, breaking it down for us. Scoreless, which is what we like to see, between Arizona and the Carolina Panthers in the Hall of Fame game.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Alongside Matt Humans, I'm Tim Murray. We're going to check in with Mike Sando of The Athletic here in just a moment as his annual tiers article of quarterbacks is out now. But a quick update from the Hall of Fame game. Total down to 28.5. Cardinals have flipped to the favorite at -$1.40, facing a 3rd-and-7 here. Carson Beck, ooh, nice pass from Carson Beck down to the 40-yard line. So some life for the Arizona Cardinals, and that is probably why they are the favorites right now. Live total, 28.5. Football season, as you know, right around the corner, and just like the players, you need your reps before week one. The Sharps have a free weekly league that lets you practice the same football plays you already study. Props, sides, totals, and combos. Everyone starts with 10,000 chips. Build your stack, climb the leaderboard, and sharpen your reads. Enter at jointhesharps.com, or you can scan the QR code on the screen. Make sure you use VSIN50 for a 50% deposit up to $100. Jointhesharps.com. The promo code is VSIN50. All right, let's head to our progressive guest line and welcome in Mike Sando from The Athletic. You could follow him on social media at Sando NFL, entering almost his third decade of covering the NFL. And Mike, you've been doing this tiers for a long time. It's one of the almost rituals of the offseason. And I know it's kind of a blanket question, but was there a quarterback that when you got the data back from those you talked to that surprised you at how varying the votes were on them?
So in a couple different ways. So number one, Dak Prescott rising five spots. I mean, did he do something that he's never done before? That was interesting to me. He made a jump from 12 to 7. I think people, you know, realize that he's not just a good quarterback, but he stayed healthy for the year and then has some great weaponry, and they like what they're doing with Brian Schottenheimer there. That was interesting. Aaron Rodgers was interesting because the coaches were way higher on him than the personnel people. It was the biggest gap along those lines, where coaches love all the stuff he can do at the line of scrimmage and command of everything. You know, if the defense is slow to substitute, he's going to catch them, you know, in a 12 man on the field, or he's going to use his cadence to draw you off sides and get a penalty or a free play. But the personnel people can tell, you know, they're focused on the fact that he can't move anymore, can't get out of his own way. And I thought that was interesting. And a third one was Tyler Shuck in New Orleans was pretty interesting to me because he's low in this thing, but the people that saw him, which wasn't that very many, you know, the voters, a minority of them probably really saw him, really liked him. So I think he's somebody that I would be looking for to maybe take a jump. You know, if I were looking at teams in the NFC South, you know, the Saints could be a little interesting offensively with him.
Mike, how about Bo Nix of the Denver Broncos? Off a couple of ankle surgeries. I think a lot of people were surprised when Sean Payton drafted him so high. But he had, a positive season. Which way do you think Bo Nix is going to go, and are you optimistic about Bo Nix?
I think he can go a little bit higher. You know, he went to the top of Tier 3. You know, if we just put it on paper, all the games they've won, and I think his stats have been decent enough, you might have made a case for lower in the twos. Drake May and Caleb Williams from that draft class made it into the twos. So, but when you're winning with defense like they are, and then there's things built into the offense there to make the passing game easier for him, whether it's, RPOs or easier passes for him, you get downgraded for that. He's dangerous with his legs. When you have a good defense and a quarterback who can scramble around, think of like Seattle back in the day with Russell Wilson before he really developed. You're going to win a lot of games. You're going to pull out games late. And he's been able to do that. He just doesn't quite have the, people just aren't, when you face Denver, you're not like, oh my gosh, we got Bo Nix, look out. It's more like, hey, don't forget this guy can run and he's going to steal a first down for us in a 2 minute that could swing the game in the end. And he's not also aggressive, a little fearless. He may throw it down the field on us. But I think he still has to develop in the passing component of it. And you probably couldn't be, in many better situations with Sean Payton. They love Davis Webb. They got Jalen Waddle. He'll have a chance to do that this year.
You know, you mentioned Caleb Williams. So I wanted to follow up on that. Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, 1-2 in that draft a couple of years ago. Williams underwhelming as a rookie, much better last year with Ben Johnson calling that offense. Where do you expect these two quarterbacks to go? Do you, I think in the near future, do you expect Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels to be top 10 quarterbacks?
I bet you one. Well, I mean, Caleb Williams is already tied for 11th. Right. I was joking with some guys in Chicago that if he could have just been two spots higher, the Bears would have had a higher rated quarterback than Green Bay for the first time since leather helmets, probably in a long time, maybe going back a ways. But I think Jaden Daniels already could easily go to tier one with a great season because he was headed that way after his rookie year. He made it all the way up to sixth last year, had the injury issues, didn't look as good. The team around him, I think, has question marks and he falls to 13, but having that rookie season in the bank where they went to the championship game and he showed he could run it, he could pass it, gives him an easy path forward, I think, if he has a good year. Caleb Williams probably has that too. I think he is a little bit more volatile. I mean, the highs are so high. He did a great job of reducing the number of sacks that he took. Some of that's the offensive line being better, but it's also him. A lot of that's on the quarterback. So I feel pretty good about Caleb. I think his ceiling's super high, just when you really lean into your legs and the ability to run the ball, you're going to have inconsistency. You're going to have the good and the bad. Stuff's going to happen. A lot of it's going to be good, but the consistency of the offense can suffer. So that's probably something to watch for with him.
Mike Sando, senior NFL writer of The Athletic. His annual Tears article is out. Quick update from the Hall of Fame game. Cardinals on the one-yard line, end of the first quarter. So if you bet the first quarter under, maybe a bit of a fortune there as we head to the second quarter. Scoreless, Cardinals should be able to punch it in here in a scoreless game. You know, I remember asking you, Mike, about Jalen Hurts last year and, you know, the responses there. And there were a lot of skeptics, despite the success on the field. Last year, even though make the playoffs, there were still some questions. He drops all the way to 17. How polarizing is Jalen Hurts amongst the 50 folks you talk to?
I think there's a dilemma with him because he's had the two Super Bowls and he had great numbers in them. You know, really threw them to victory against Kansas City in the first half of that game, finished 17 of 22, you know, impressive. But when you watch them play in general, they're not really putting on his shoulders as a passer the way some of those guys that are ahead of him do. He's a little bit limited in some of the, you know, the routes that he throws better than others. And then the great team around him, right? He's had probably the best offensive line in the league. They had Saquon Barkley. They've had two, you know, money wide receivers. The defense has been a little up and down in recent years, but really good now. So I think the vibe there is just that you have to give him his due because he's of those two Super Bowls, but is he really doing that every week? You know, another comparison along those lines, you know, Eli Manning to me is his Hall of Fame case is complicated by the fact that he had those two Super Bowls, was great, you know, in the key moments of those to beat New England. But during the regular season was never really seen as a top five quarterback. And, you know, Jalen Hurts is not Eli Manning. But sometimes it's a little bit of a dilemma, right? How much to reward the a couple of big game performances versus what do you see from week to week?
Mike Sando with us. How about Justin Herbert? Did you get various opinions on him or pretty unanimous that he's got all the tools, he just needs to win in the playoffs?
So he got votes, multiple votes in tier one and three. So if you're giving Justin Herbert a three, you're like impatient. You're running out of patience. Right, you don't want to hear the excuses anymore. You don't want to hear about, you know, the receivers or the offensive line being hurt or the bad coach or whatever it is. You just want to see some more production. You want to see some playoff wins. That's tier three. Tier one, this guy's got everything physically. You have 27 teams would rather have him than their quarterback. Give me a chance to have him on our team. We would make a deep playoff run, and you buy into some of those reasons instead of calling them excuses. I do think it's notable organizationally that franchise has had Phillip Rivers and it's had Justin Herbert for over 20 years. They last won the division in 2009. The division.
Right.
I mean, don't you? It's a four-team division. It's not like this is the NFC Central or something in the day. You know, that is hard to do and to me speaks beyond the quarterback because I know those two guys can play quarterback.
He's a Hall of Fame voter, senior NFL writer for The Athletic, and his Tears column, always a must-read every NFL season. Mike, always appreciate the insight and enjoy the start of the season.
I will. You too. Thanks.
There he is, Mike Sando. And hey, we got a touchdown, Matt Newman's Corey Kiner into the end zone. It is 7-0 on what looks to be a beautiful night in Canton, Ohio.
That was a 13-play, 96-yard drive, 7 minutes and 17 seconds. How about that drive?
We'll get you updated on the live odds. Also, react to what Mike had to say and take a look at that column as football season is here, boys and girls. And our first touchdown of the preseason goes to the Arizona Cardinals. They lead 7-0 in the second quarter.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We had a touchdown before we went to break. 7-0 is the lead for the Arizona Cardinals, but Carolina Panthers on the march here. Total back to 32.5. So I would imagine this is a negative play coming as that just dropped a little bit. Carson Beck, as you mentioned before break, Matt, engineered a pretty productive drive there for the Arizona Cardinals, and Corey Kiner, gets into the end zone, the second year back out of Cincinnati.
Yeah, Carson Beck had a nice throw actually to open that drive. What it was out past the 40-yard line, I think, from inside his own five.
Yeah, 35-yard connection to Jalen Brooks.
Yeah, that was the big play that really got the Cardinals going offensively. And you're seeing a lot of backup players on the field on defense. And that's one thing that makes me a little bit nervous about this total tonight, playing under 35.5. The live total is now 33.5. So we got a long way to go. But these defenses are pretty weak on the field. And if these quarterbacks can make plays, it's going to put this total in jeopardy of going over. Kenny Pickett here with a throw and a first down. And the Panthers have the ball at the 22 of the Cardinals with 12 minutes to go here in the second quarter. So what looked like a dead under is all of a sudden changing here, where both offenses are showing a spark. And, Tim, this is not going to be an easy under all of a sudden.
No, first quarter, first couple of drives, couple of great punts. You're feeling, all right, this is going to work in our favor.
I got off to the slowest start possible, right? Yep. It's the first quarter, most of the first quarter, about as sluggish offensively as you could wish for. And now all of a sudden, bam, just a couple of big plays, and this game has kind of turned around. There's a throw into the end zone by Kenny Pickett, but it's knocked away at the last second, so the score is still 7-0, 11:49 to go, second and 10 for the Panthers.
Live total up to 35, 34.5, so it looks like some positive things could be coming here for the Carolina Panthers, so we'll see if the Arizona Cardinals can get a stop here, as right now the Cardinals on the drive, absolutely their best drive so far of this game. 11:49 to go. Second quarter, 7-0, Arizona with the lead. Corey Kiner scored the game's first touchdown. Oh, my gosh.
His defenses are bad.
This is not good. Not promising for...
That's just a simple dump off over the middle, and there was not a defender within, 8 yards of the receiver when he caught the ball coming out of the backfield here. Watch this. No linebacker anywhere in the middle of the field. What is going on?
Wide open across the middle of the field.
Yeah, we got a touchdown, Panthers.
Wow.
7-6.
Jeez Louise. This is not good. Not good for those who took the under. Not good if you took the first half under as a Carolina Panthers. A.J. Dillon. How about A.J. Dillon here having some...
You're going to go for two.
No, they haven't scored the touchdown yet on the live feed here. So,
the live feed is way behind the...
There it is. A.J. Dillon into the end zone very easily. So the Carolina Panthers on the board, and now the sweat is on. Live total 36.5. So the question now, Matt, you and I are both already invested, and it doesn't feel good, at least for me. You could get a dead under second half here. Back-to-back touchdown drives. Is this the time for someone to get involved in the live under here? 36.5 is the live total in this one. After two successful drives, is this when things slow down a little bit?
Who knows? I don't. I got a small, like I said, I got a small bet under 35.5 in this game. I'm not going to sweat it. It's not going to be a position that I'm looking to hedge or anything like that. It's just... It's hard to say right now because the defenses have looked so bad in the last two series. This is not like it's great quarterback play, Tim. It's not like it's a dynamic playmakers on offense who are busting this game open. This is the defenses leaving the middle of the field wide open. It's too easy for the quarterback. So, yeah, the game's probably going to slow down a little bit. It's probably going to play something close to the number, but I don't want to make any statements about what I think is going to happen now. I did not think, based on the way the game started, that we would just see back-to-back touchdown drives.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
7-7 is the score right now. 10:56 to go in the second quarter. Panthers and Cardinals. Carson Beck, 8 of 9, 80 yards. We talked about his most promising pass. His only completion over 10 yards was a 35-yard completion. Actually, has two to Jalen Brooks going for over double digits, one for 35 yards. So 7-7 is the score. Matt, you mentioned when the Chicago White Sox went up 4-0, you said it might be a time to look at the Boston Red Sox, because these are the comeback kids. And lo and behold, Matt, do you want to tell the people what the score is right now?
Red Sox had to come from behind to win in six consecutive games. And right now they have come back to tie it at five. At Fenway, White Sox at the plate in the top of the fifth, but that did not take long, Tim. Fifth inning, the White Sox, Red Sox in a tie at five. And by the way, let's get back to what Mike Sando was talking about, the quarterback tiers, just to explain this a little bit better for everyone out there who's not familiar with it. How does he put together these tiers, and what was his top tier? Who are the quarterbacks in his top tier?
Yeah, so, it's a great question. I should have prefaced it when we talked to him. So he does not – this is not his opinion.
Right.
He talks to 50 people across the NFL. He's been doing this now for a number of years. He said this year's panel consisted of 8 general managers, 5 assistant GMs, 5 former GMs, 3 other executives, plus 9 head coaches, 10 defensive coordinators, 5 offensive coordinators, 2 offensive assistants, 1 defensive assistant, and 2 coaches specializing in analytics/game management. So 21 execs, 29 coaches overall in this. So his top tier, Matt, is at number 1, Patrick Mahomes. 49 of the 50 panelists had Patrick Mahomes tier 1.
Okay.
So by the way, you don't vote who's the best, you vote in tiers. So tier 1, Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen and Matthew Stafford each in tier 1 as well. 48 out of 50 votes for both Allen and Stafford had them in tier 1. They each had 2 tier 2 votes. And then the final quarterback in tier 1, Joe Burrow. 46 out of 50 votes had him as a tier 1 quarterback, Matt. Last year he was ranked number 3, down to number 4. Four of those had him at tier 2. As we look at that, would you disagree with any of those, and would you have put any other quarterback in tier 1?
No, I don't disagree with that. Joe Burrow, obviously you want to see more durability from him. Injuries have been a big issue. But it's pretty clear Mahomes, Allen, Stafford definitely have to be tier 1. And when he's healthy, Joe Burrow, no doubt, is a tier 1 quarterback.
So Lamar Jackson is a tier 2 quarterback.
Yeah, well, he played like it last year. But yeah. I also think he was playing injured a lot last year. He definitely took a step back. This is going to be the season, I think, you're going to find out if Lamar Jackson's still an MVP type player, a tier 1 type quarterback or not.
So Lamar Jackson, for the first time in his career, as there is a wide open, oh boy, that is a this game is opening up, and this thing is, my under is done. You've got maybe a hope in the second half, but this thing is.
5 total just dropped or jumped to 40.5. That was about a 50-yard pass play for the Cardinals. Again, you got receivers wide open down the field. You know, that's what's the danger, too, of betting an under. Is that you got a bunch of backup players on defense. And we're seeing that right there. Boy, that's just a horrendous defensive play by the Panthers. Cardinals have first down at the 11-yard line.
Jalen Brooks is the star tonight for Carson Beck, as he has 3 catches for 99 yards. Carson Beck, 9 of 10 for a $1.29. First half total dipped to 17. And right now, with 10 minutes to go, after a scoreless first quarter, more than likely going to have 21 points with around 8 minutes.
Can we go back to that graphic quickly and just wrap this up?
Yep.
What were the quarterbacks? Lamar Jackson, 5. Who was 6? Dak Prescott was 7, right?
Justin Herbert was 6.
That's right.
Dak Prescott was 7. Drake May and Jared Goff tied for 8th. A lot of quarterbacks in tier 2, Matt.
Right.
Jordan Love, 10. Brock Purdy, Caleb Williams, 11. Caleb Williams, big riser after last year, no surprise, coming in from, I think, 23 up to 11. Jaden Daniels, 13th. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold tied for 14th. Trevor Lawrence, Jalen Hurts rounding out tier 2. Matt, we got some exciting news. Our guy,
Big Swede.
He's back, baby. He was our utility infielder for the summer, and now he's back to his normal spot. Cashing Out is back starting this Sunday. So once primetime games wrap up, the real breakdown is just getting started. Dustin's serving up best bets, key angles, and real conversation. No fluff.
Are you serious?
Watching Cashing Out. Watch Cash Out. Cashing Out this Sunday, 10 Eastern, then weeknights at 11. 7-7 Cardinals and Panthers.